Welcome to High Techies Podcast. I'm your host, Pramod Thakal. In the High Techies Podcast, we speak to a lot of entrepreneurs and leaders who are trying to solve the worldly problem. In our podcast, we speak about challenges in forming a business. We also talk about motivation around the business. We talk about growth. We talk about opportunities. And most importantly, we talk about failure. After all, lessons from failing helps you overcome bigger challenges, so that the deeper insights from leaders would help you solve your own problems. Now, in this episode of High Techies Podcast, my guest is Yvette Adams. Yvette is a serial entrepreneur and a multi-award winning businesswoman, including winning the ICT Women of the Year at the I Awards in 2013 and the Commonwealth Bank Business Honor category at the Telstra Businesswoman in Queensland in 2010. Yvette, welcome.
Now, how is it going?
Yeah, it's going good. Business is just crazy busy. And I feel like, there's a few good news stories in Australia. Things are opening up. I heard on the news just tonight, they are talking about maybe international travel will open in October. So I'm really hopeful of that because I love to travel and I miss it.
Yeah, even here in Belgium, like, we are also looking forward to traveling again. But it's still, you know, far-fetched reality, I would say, because it's one thing to say that we might be able to travel, and the other thing is to be fully implemented, you know. So
we're still
hoping for the best.
I know, and we keep hearing how bad Europe still is, or certain areas particularly. So that seems so unrealistic if there's areas that are still having a lot of people dying, like even with a vaccine, that's going to take a long time to come recover.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Especially this part of the region, it's more affected than the others. And we see that, you know, the spike is still there. It's always increasing. It's not decreasing at all. And
we are
wondering if the vaccine is doing anything.
So how much is are you talking about Europe in general or Brussels?
No,
or Belgium?
No, we are talking about Belgium and also our neighbors like Netherlands and also Germany. You know, we are close by. So I'm just thinking, like, you know, based on our numbers, it would be very similar to theirs number, you know, so maybe give or take, you know, given the population of theirs, sometimes, you know, we are, I think, even worse compared to other regions. So.
Yeah. And we just today had our mask restrictions lifted. I've done another podcast with a woman in the UK just last week, and she was asking me about Australia, and she said, we feel like down there you guys are free and easy and having a good time. And I said, no, we're actually wearing masks at the moment in Queensland. And she didn't realize that, but we certainly have had a lot more freedom and less cases and so many more positives than what we're hearing from Europe. But yeah, there's some restrictions and changes to our life. It's not all how it used to be, put it that way.
Yeah. I think compared to other countries which are larger in landmass, I think we are smaller, and then, you know, when you are living in the smaller landmass, it's easier for the virus to spread, you know. So I think that's what it is, you know. So
yeah, the more populous places.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's faster. Also, you know, the traveling wise, like people have to come through Belgium, like, you know, for example, people coming from Netherlands, they have to come to Belgium to go to somewhere like Paris, right? So it's always people traveling, you know, so yeah. But yeah, nevertheless, yeah.
I've been there many years ago, 2002, I was last in Brussels.
Wow, that's a long time ago, yeah.
Yeah. Nearly 20 years.
it's I think it has changed, you know, not as in, you know, the structures and everything, but overall the population, I'm sure it has increased quite a bit.
So
you're based in Queensland?
I'm in the Sunshine Coast. I'm 100 kilometers north of Brisbane. But my accent is from New Zealand. I'm from New Zealand. And then I lived in the UK for 7 years as well and traveled the world for 7 years. So I'm not from Australia, but I live here now. And I am an Australian citizen now too.
That's interesting. So why did you travel to London then? Like, you know, was there anything like you were doing in London, like as a work, or like, what was the motivation there?
Back when I traveled, I left in 1998, it was very common for New Zealanders to travel. It was almost a rite of passage. Mm-hmm. You just, you know, did your uni. I actually didn't go to university. Or you did your job and then you went overseas and you go to see the world. And a lot of my peer group did, although I was one of the first in my particular group and others followed. But and then you used it as a base to see the world. New Zealanders are adventurers. We love to travel. So I think that's it. For me personally, my grandfather's from England, so I'm only second generation New Zealander on some lines, but all of our heritage is from there. So I guess there's a bit of fascination with who were they? Where are they from? Let's meet the relatives. So I did a lot of that while I was there in family tree research. And I just wanted to develop my career and challenge myself. So I worked originally for the New Zealand government's sport and recreation department for 3 years before I left. So I had government communications sort of experience. And then when I got to the UK, I wanted to work in media. I did do an online journalism course, so it was official, but it just didn't go to uni per se. It was all correspondence, and yeah, I worked in media and marketing and got great experience there, mainly media while I was in the UK, and sometimes waiting tables in between travel, and lots of life experience. And I'm glad for it. I'm glad I did the travel while I could, because look at the world we live in now.
Yeah, I'm sure, like, you know, you would now think back and say, oh, I did the right thing then, you know. So
yeah, I did, but still a lot of my life and my friends are there. So I talk to people over there all the time. I was due to come back for a wedding last year, couldn't come. So it's been a good reflection, this whole COVID thing, because it's made me go, I have not really got a lot of friends where I live. They're all overseas or interstate. And when you get locked down, it's like, you know, who are you going to hang out with? So I've got to make more of an effort locally to do that, because I was always just traveling or working and they were my friends where I went. Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting. So, you know, you mentioned like you were involved in the media sector. I'm quite curious on this particular part, because, you know, for me, the media has changed over the years. Like, you know, we used to be, you know, doing a lot of offline media, I would say, you know, mm-hmm. Now we are into the online space. And maybe can you maybe talk through the evolution of media from your perspective, you know, being in London, working there, and then, you know, now doing your own business operations. Like, maybe can you just reflect on the evolution that you saw firsthand? How do you see the evolution?
Yeah, I can definitely talk about that. I feel like a dinosaur where I have to start, because I will start the story in Wellington, New Zealand. I was 16 years old. I wanted to work in media. I really liked sport. So I was a female in the sports department at a main city newspaper. They were all smoking cigarettes in the office, because that's what the media used to look like. They all had these huge keyboards. We have to punch down really hard to get the keyboard to work.
Yeah.
With a flag hanging out here or a fag hanging out here. And they're all men and I'm female and way younger than them. So yeah. That was my first media experience. And, you know, you need a photo. Go look in the filing cabinet. Do we have any photos on this person in the filing cabinet? That's crazy when you think about it. And actually, even before that, I published my own newspaper when I was 17. That was my first business. And I did bromide. So my mum had a friend who was a printer, and I literally had to cut each part out, stick it on a page, and we stuck it through a machine. And that was called bromide, which now you don't do. So I remember those days. And then I worked as a journalist early on, freelancing for like glossy women's magazines and things. So that was submit a story. And my first experience of getting paid was getting rung up maybe 3-4 months later. Oh, you sent us a story. We'd like to run it. How much would you like to get paid? And I said, I don't know. What's the going rate? Like, I was 18, I think. And they said, oh, about $300 for a story like this. And that was a lot of money back then. I was like, that sounds good. I'd be very grateful for the $300. Thank you. And I went, I actually really enjoy writing. So if I can get a career from this, I'm going to keep writing and getting paid for it. This is great. So I went to the UK with the intentions of working in media, and it wasn't that easy to start with. You're a nobody. You don't have the connections, all of this stuff. What did I do? It took a while. I think that first stint, my first 2 years, I probably did more recruitment temp work. I did work in publications, but I wasn't writing. I remember working for Slimmers magazine. Uh-huh. And that was an irony because here I was with some quite overweight people working on the editorial for Slimming magazine. And I was just like a PA. And then they would go, should we go out for a Chinese smorgasbord at lunch? The irony of this is just crazy. But anyway, that was one of my early media experiences. And then I finally found my feet probably around the year 2000 when I started working for TNT magazine in London, which any Kiwi, Aussie or South African or any traveller would know was quite an important publication there because that was the source of jobs, travel deals, flats, your whole life really. Where you're going to travel, where you're going to live, what work you're going to do, and what's going on in the city as well. And so I worked for them originally in the editorial department. Then they said, we're going to build a website. It's the year 2000. We'd like you to head the content, be the content editor. Mm-hmm. So that was my first foray into digital, the year 2000. Go away and do a HTML course. So I did that, came back. But then it was an XML website. So at the time they'd contracted a company, not realized it was XML, and they've sent me for a HTML course, completely different languages.
Yeah.
And then they just sort of said, do it. And so you had to just figure out what was going on. That was the dot-com bubble, if you've heard of this, like early 2000s. So there were massages at work. There was free lunches. There was nice times. It was a good time to be in media. And then 2001 hit, of course, the Twin Towers. Mm-hmm. And the economy changed a lot after that. That newspaper lost a lot of travel business. You know, things were thrown into disarray. But I stayed in digital from then because I could see the future of it. I could see journalism moving into that. And I was quite pleased to be selected from the whole staff to do that role. And no one else wanted to do it. Oh, boring. Who wants to be on the website? They want to see their name in the magazine.
Yeah.
But now, you know, fast forward 20 years and you could easily go, that was the right move. So I saw media evolve to be, you're not just a journalist, you take the photos as well. You know what? You actually lay out the pages now as well. Mm-hmm. And so the job became multifaceted. So when I came back to New Zealand, I think around 01, I ended up working for a local city newspaper. And I think I was a sub-editor. And I did do everything. Like I went out and got the story. I took the photos. I laid it out. I checked it, other people's work. We tried to check each other's, not your own, because you wouldn't pick up the mistakes. And I saw that evolution coming. And then I've kept my hand in it. I guess fast forward to today, I've created my own digital marketing company in 2007. And again, without realizing, that was quite early. I don't know how it compares to Europe for early, but for certainly for Australia, that was early to have a full service creative agency doing a lot of digital. Like not many people knew what SEO was or PPC. And we started social media services in 2008, and we were most certainly very early to market then. And I had other agencies coming to me saying, how can you charge for this? What are you doing exactly? Like writing about what you buy yourself for breakfast? How do you get paid for this? They just didn't understand the concept. So, and now fast forward, we're still trying to lead with digital marketing and especially in social media. But also SEO and PPC, and it's a very fast and competitive industry these days. But I'd still do sometimes some PR campaigns. But you know, in the last 12 months, there's been a lot of movement in media with a lot of publications folding. So that's a long-winded answer. I hope it's not too much detail, but my evolution of media story.
Yeah, indeed. Like you've seen the offline. Like you mentioned, you know, how the state of the industry was in the past. And you also mentioned now the digital media, right? And I, you know, it's quite an interesting journey that you had, but you wanted to remain as an entrepreneur all these years, right? So I'm just wondering, like, why there is so much beauty about being an entrepreneur?
Well, that's a good question because I didn't figure it out for quite a long time. And I think I had a dual career of being an entrepreneur, but also having a career. And I didn't really realize that I actually had aspirations because no one ever said to me at school, you know what, if you want, you can work for yourself. And it's called being an entrepreneur. And I've actually done TED Talks on this about it's almost a dirty word back in the day, an entrepreneur. They're a hustler. They're a dealer. They're a doing naughty stuff sort of person that had a bad connotation. So no one at school ever suggested go and do that. Everyone just said you go to university or some tertiary education, you go get a job. That's the path.
Yeah.
So I started the newspaper at 17. I sold that business. I learned a lot because I sold it for a very low price. I didn't know what I was doing. I was 17 years old. And then I started an online t-shirt business in 2002. And I sold it 4 years later for five figures, which is pretty good. I had no initial investment. It was just online. My biggest challenge for that business was getting people to use a thing called PayPal to buy the t-shirt, because they went, what, you want me to put my credit card online? Because again, the year's 2002, people are not used to this. They're not comfortable with it. What if someone gets hold of it? What if all my money goes? They didn't get PayPal's quite safe. Now everybody has PayPal and many other things. So yeah, then the third business, Creative Collective, is when I guess I finally made the transition from being, having a career, because you know the t-shirts I was doing whilst traveling, whilst having jobs, that was on the side. And then the Creative Collective came about because I was back here in Australia. I just had my second child. I thought I can't really go back to work and work for someone. And how, what am I going to do with these kids? And daycare is so much money and I want to spend time with them. But I don't just want to go to playgroups and not work either. Like I've got too much, I don't know, energy, interest to just, that was not for me. So I started the Creative Collective and that's how it came about. And then I went, now I don't think I could ever go back and have a job. I actually got offered a very nice job last year for one of the big social networks. Mm-hmm. It was a very high six-figure salary. It was very tempting in COVID when things were pretty, what's the word, scary. Like we were losing a lot of revenue. We lost all our travel, tourism, clients, hospitality. Things are really, really tough and really, really stressful. So it was like, wow, I could just go take a job and, I don't know, pay a CEO a third of my salary or less and go take a job. That's quite attractive right now. But I didn't. I stuck it out. I'm still an entrepreneur and that's where I'll stay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So what now, again, like I'm coming back to the same question. I'm thinking, so what is the driver there then? Like, you know, if you just look back at your life over the years, you know, there was always a driver. There was always a motivation beneath you. Like, okay, you know, this is something that I always want to do. I don't want to be hired, but I want to hire myself, you know? So what is that motivation? You know, so where does this come from?
Yeah, I've asked myself this question and I think it's not one thing, it's several things. I think number one, I worked out very early on, I like money and I want money because money is freedom. It's not about being greedy. Mm-hmm. But, you know, when I was 17 years old, I started the first business because I needed money to pay for my sport, which was water polo. My parents didn't have the money to give me. I played for New Zealand. I needed money to fund that. So that was the motivation. And today it's, well, when I started the business, the Creative Collective, it was because I needed money to pay for my kids, to pay for my mortgage. Mm-hmm. And I needed it to be flexible as well. I needed to do it late at night, early in the morning. So that's why I went very online very early on. So I've been very cloud-based from, you know, the beginning, which also at the time was pretty new. And what else? I guess the ability to earn unlimited earnings potential and not have to ask for holidays. I want to go to my kids' swimming carnival if it's on, to take a family holiday for 1 month in New Zealand to see my friends and family if I want to. You can't do that when you have a job. You have to ask for leave. You might get the leave declined. Yeah. So it's all that freedom and lifestyle that I'm really doing it for.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So, yeah, because every entrepreneur has their own motivation, and some of them perhaps have indicated in the past as well, like freedom and you know, to be able to do the things that they love to do. You know, I think those are key motivation. Now when you look at this industry, media industry, you know, there's a you know, different you know, targeted audience. Like in the past, like you, when you were just starting up, you had a certain group of customers or target market segment, I would say. Now we are into the digital media and perhaps the customer segment has changed over the years, right? If you look at this different landscape now, what can you talk about the present landscape for our customers?
Well, it's very different. I mean, as targeted as you used to be able to get, the example I always use is, say, if you sell bridal gowns you're going to advertise back in the day in a wedding magazine, mm-hmm. but you don't know if the people reading the magazine are aspirational. One day they would love to find the right partner and marry, or they just want to look at the pretty dresses, or whether they just got engaged, or whether it's crunch time. They're really hot customers, you know, or maybe they're trying to price how to sell their divorcee dress and get some money. You don't know who they are. But now on Facebook, you can target people on they just got engaged. You can target them on where they are, what their education is, what their income is. It's pretty micro. It's pretty awesome. So I've done a lot of training in Facebook, and I have their global certification, well, about three of them. There's more to get, but, you know, I've done a lot of study to get those. And I've had a lot of training direct with Facebook Australia as well. So I understand their product pretty well. And I do a lot with LinkedIn as well, which is great for your industry sectors. I mean, in LinkedIn, you can target by what skills people list on their LinkedIn profile, by what groups they're part of, by what industry they're in, of course, and their age. So it's so defined. And then it goes on further that you can remarket people who have visited your website and expressed interest. You can remarket your database. You can remarket people who have watched your video for 5 seconds. The list is so long of what the possibilities of audience segments are now. So the challenge is almost to strategize when you get a new customer and a client, in my case, they don't always know their target market. So sometimes you've got to figure out, well, let's start with this lot and this lot and this lot, and then we'll see what works. So to give a specific example, we've recently started working with a solar company. Now, solar is a very competitive industry. You've got to pay quite a lot of cost per click. There's a lot of people very active spending big money already online. So we've broken the segments up for them, because technically lots of people would have solar, into new homeowners who are probably going to be 20 to 35, mm-hmm. to current homeowners who are probably going to be 35 to 55 and looking at renovation and home repairs and home maintenance and all these sorts of interests, and retirees who are wanting to save money and add value and maybe sell and downsize. So you're 55 plus. And I don't know which of those markets is going to be best for that solar company right now, but I'm testing all three in every state. And within 2 or 3 months, I should know, and or even sooner, and then we will define it from there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So it's I think having this online presence, or let's say the ability to market in social media with the tools that they have provided, you know, I think that is definitely one of the key point to actually test the market and then sort of, you know, tackle it. What other things perhaps are interesting now, you know, given the tools that we are thrown at, you know, so we have a lot of tools available now compared to past. So what are some of the interesting things that you can perhaps share?
I love, you know, pushing on the boundaries and learning about the latest tech and directions things are going in. I love futurism. Some of the things that I think are interesting is, say, Facebook, you have automatic placements, or you have expanding targeting. So you can define your target market and then say to Facebook, but if you can find me more people you think might be better, do it. And I think a lot of people are hesitant to do that because they think, oh, Facebook will waste my money and they won't be scrupulous. But actually, they have such high artificial intelligence, you know, programming going on, that if you use those, they're mostly in your benefit, in my experience. You know, setting campaign budget optimization, setting automatic placements, setting dynamic traffic creative. These are all tools built into Facebook Business Manager, which a lot of people don't tick because they think, I know better. I'll do 18 to 30-year-olds in my city. Mm. But the artificial intelligence, the bots, they're pretty good. So I think that's something people could look at. I'm really loving chatbots, and I think there's a big future for them. Mm-hmm. Some clients are hesitant on them because they go, you know, you can't be impersonal, and you can't program them well. And I've had a bad experience with a chatbot, but you can program it to have a very good experience too. And it can give a quicker response. It can convert a client. It can provide customer experience and service far better than a person on a phone can sometimes do. So, you know, no one likes a phone maze. So I think there's a really exciting opportunity there. What else is there? There's so much going on all of the time. Hey, there's just new features to play with all of the time. More video keeps coming out, and you can do more with it. So LinkedIn only just released last month the ability to do a video showcase of yourself to say, I'm a consultant, this is what I can offer, or I'm looking for a job, this is my history. I think that's exciting, because then jobs move into the era of, if you're not ready to do a thing to camera and present yourself, you're probably going to be at a disadvantage when it comes to job hunting, etc. Mm-hmm. I could go on for days. There's so many things coming out all the time, and it's exciting and fun.
Especially being in the media industry, like, and to be able to know the latest trends and to be able to understand how different tools work, I think it is to your advantage. Yeah. And
rather than be scared of it, be excited about it is always my advice. Some people go, it's too hard, it's too much, I don't want to do it. But if you have this approach, you will miss out. You're straight away at a disadvantage.
Yeah, I mean, it comes down to your own motivation, right? Like we discussed earlier about the motivation. Why do you do certain things? Because you are looking for freedom, and then when do you get the freedom? Is like, you know, you are paid for doing the things that you love to do, and then how does that happen? Is because if you are always competitive enough, if you're always aware of the tools and services, then you get all the things that you want to, right? So I think it comes down to that particular part of motivation. So, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Knowing yourself for sure, and knowing I'm good at this or I'm not good at this. If you're not good, get help. I want to do this or I don't want to do this. If you don't want to do it, but you know your business needs it, get the help again.
Yeah. Right. And I want to take you to your London days now, and then learning that industry, like, you know, in London with the first-hand experience that you had about the energy and about the whole industry itself. Now, when you want to compare that to Australia or New Zealand, how do you see the difference there?
Well, I mean, it's old knowledge, because I left London in 2004. And if you said you won't go back there for 16 years, I would have said, no, I'll definitely be back sooner. But I've had a lot of life things that I've seen. I don't know, my mum had cancer, went through a separation with my partner and father of my children, big life things that prevented me from going. So I don't know what it's doing currently, and I was hopeful of getting there last year and comparing. But one thing I've noticed when I mean, I still do this. I talk to people online. I read articles online. So I do feel connected to a degree. I think the gap is much less. Like, it used to be that England or America are so far ahead of New Zealand and Australia with tech and things like that. Now I think it's quite a level playing field. You know, innovation can come from anywhere. Knowledge can be exchanged very easily, and it is. And there's some fantastic innovations and, you know, softwares and all sorts that comes out of New Zealand and Australia, but same, you know, from Europe and Americas as well. So I think it's just finding niches, isn't it, is what everybody's trying to do. Like, I saw a great one last week of a girl who created surgical stitches that turn a different color when the wound is infected. And she is an African-American girl, 17 years old. I think that is so cool as an innovation.
That's fantastic. No, I mean, you raised a very interesting point, because one of the founder I was talking to, you know, a few months ago, you know, he's also from Australia. He also mentioned that, you know, it's a level playing field now, especially with the crisis that we are going through. Like, you know, it is kind of even now, you know, as far as the knowledge is concerned, as far as the market itself is concerned. Like, you can sell anywhere, you know, because everybody's online now. You know, you don't have any other choice, right? It's a similar kind of sentiment that he shared. It reminded me of him. So
one thing is being shared here, and I agree with it, is that COVID, as awful as it's been in many ways, has been the best digital transformation project ever, because people finally now get it. Oh, wow, I can actually talk to you in another country. It's not so scary. It's not so difficult. We exchanged information. We got the job done. Oh, wow, I can run training online. Oh, wow, I can buy training online and do it. I can buy things. They come to my house. That's amazing. I'll never go to a shop again. You know, people are finally getting it because they've been forced to get it. So it is a great digital transformation project. We used to have to go for 6 months, 12 months and have conversations with businesses. You need to improve your website. You should try and get found on Google. How about social media? And they were difficult conversations. It was a hard conversion. Yeah. Now, last month, we were up 50%. It's an easy conversion. The people are just about saying, if I had a credit card machine in the meeting, they'd be putting it on it. I don't do business like that, but that's how keen they are.
But that's interesting, isn't it? Like, you know, sometimes, you know, you push too hard and then things doesn't happen. And then sometimes the situation forces the client to actually push hard, you know, towards yourself, which is interesting.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you want to run a business, right? So when you started your venture, every business that you started, did you already had, you know, like a star in your mind? Okay, this is the star I'm chasing. Or you just started because, you know, you wanted to solve this particular problem at that point in time?
So the three I'm running right now each have a little bit of a different story. So the Creative Collective, I started because I needed money for my children and I needed to create a job around what worked for my family. But I didn't start off trying to create a full service creative agency. I just started offering a wide range of services and people would start saying, oh, can you do that too? Can you do that too? And I would say yes and yes. And if I couldn't do it, I would get somebody who could. And I built the model that way with a lot of contractors and then eventually team and then eventually commercial premises. And then you're in a full blown operation. The Training Collective was a spin-off company of the Creative Collective. So that was a different start in that people started asking us, I guess it was driven by the market. You know, you've built us this great website and you gave us an hour training, but we'd actually like more training on that. We'd like the whole team to have training or the marketing department. Could you run a day workshop? Okay, sure, we'll run training. You know, you're doing your social media for me, but I'd really like to understand it. Could you train someone? And we might want to bring it back in-house. Yes, sure. So because of that demand, we started offering training. We said, we don't mind which way you do business with us, training or service. We're happy to help you, whatever you think you need. And that has been a really good move because a lot of agencies do offer maybe a little workshop, but really it's a lead generation thing. Ours are genuine, just take the information. We don't expect to get business out of it. If we do, great. So some start off with training for us and then actually need the service. Some start with service and then need the training. But either way, we're, you know, gaining revenue, and we think clients who combine the two actually do the best when they have some, you know, built knowledge in-house. And then the final business, Awards Hub, that was started because I could see an opportunity in the market. I won quite a few business awards myself. So people started contacting me saying, hey, could you have a look over my submission? Hey, I'd like to win awards too. What do you think I should enter? And I could see an opportunity. So I started helping people for free. And then it just became so many. I went, I can't help everybody for free all day long. This is a business. So I created awardshub.com and created an online portal where people could search for awards, get their list and go off and do them. And they pay a small fee for this. It's a nice passive income. Or they can come to us and say, I want to enter this one. Help me do it. Give me your expertise. I don't have time. I'm not a good writer. I can't write about myself. So we've been doing that since, well, 10 years now too. They're all quite different how they started.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, we spoke about entrepreneurship and we spoke about your journey. Now, I want you to reflect on your journey and then tell me, like, did you find this particular journey very lonely?
Good question. at times, yes. And at times, you know, the frustrations you might take out on your partner, or, you know, sick of hearing about it and just saying it's a bad day today, or not earning enough money, maybe I'll go and get a job. And I think that's a pretty normal thing to say somewhere along in the entrepreneurial journey, if you're honest enough.
Yeah.
There's some great articles actually out about mental health and the entrepreneurial road, and it can be very lonely and very frustrating and very sad and very many things. But I actually had a, here's a story. I now have a business partner for one of the businesses, Kat Lees, the Creative Collective. So she actually started with me in my first year as an intern, and then she became a contractor because I said, you know, you're adding value here, I want to pay you. And then she went to another city because she had some family stuff on, and then she contacted me and said, I actually can't work for anyone else. I think I want to be an entrepreneur like you. You've ruined me, she said. I can't just get And I said, okay, what do you want to do? And she said, I want to learn from you. Can you mentor me? I want to start my own business, and asked about her motivations and things. And we decided we would create franchise. So she became my first franchisee, and we ran the franchise operation. And I had one other franchise in the Gold Coast as well for maybe 4 or 5 years, quite successful. And then it came up to the time where she'd found a partner, was having a baby. I'd had some changes of senior staff moving on after 5 years at the company. So I was feeling a bit exposed, to be honest. I was thinking, if they leave, I'm not going to have the right staff. How am I going to train the right staff? Mm-hmm. She's about to have the baby. And we had a big conversation and we decided to go into business partnership together. Mm-hmm. So I guess what I'm trying to say is we've had a really long journey together, and that has made it not very lonely, because in one way or another, as an intern, as a contractor, as a franchisee, and now as a business partner since 2014, and we've driven massive growth since then, she's been by my side. And it's a really good business partnership story, because we've never had one argument. I think we have a really healthy relationship, and here we are raising children. We've both been through separations and all the difficulties that come with that, and we've held each other up. There's been times where I couldn't work because I was too distraught for what was happening in my life. I had to take some time out and just attend to my family, and same for her. And the other one steps in. So yeah, a dual CEO role in a way, two females juggling their families, raising children, and getting through the trials and tribulations of separation, and running a business, and yeah, driving the growth too. It's worked well. So I have, and then the team, I don't feel lonely because I've created a great culture, and we're very consultative. It's not us and them, it's all of us together, flat model. Yeah,
because if you look at your journey as well, like you mentioned, at times it can be a lonely journey, and you know, you are lucky in that perspective that you had your partner, you know, working with you, and maybe, you know, filling the gap whenever it was necessary. Not everybody will have that sort of, you know, a partner next to you. And in that perspective, you know, indeed, like a lot of entrepreneurs has said to me, like, Pramod, you know, it's kind of lonely. Sometimes you want to give up, and maybe it's more, like you said, just take up a job and be happy with that. But then the very next morning you are like, no, I'm not going to do that. I cannot be hired, you know, today. so that's where the question is coming from.
Yeah, I think I should also add, though, of course, there's been a lot of amazing people along the way who have helped me. Business advisors, even my brother, he's got quite a good business mind, and he's been a great support for HR because that's his discipline. So I've rung him many times. Should I fire this person? How would I fire them? Should I hire this person? What sort of person do you think I need? These are the questions I have. And, you know, who else has been there? Accountants. We've had some business coaches along the way. So if you don't have a business partner, like I've talked about, and I know, as you say, lots of people don't, you've really got to set up that network of people you can rely and call on. And I've had a board of advisors before as well, and have those meetings and take them seriously and take their feedback on board, because they're there to help you if you set it up well as well.
And, you know, one of the, you know, media industry itself now is more technical, right? If you think about it, you know, from the past to now, you know, it has become more technical. And I would say it's not a media industry, but it has become a tech industry now, you know, from my perspective, because you have to learn a lot of tools, and you have to be aware of different, you know, programs that are available for you to sort of, you know, be competitive enough, right? In this particular space, you would find a lot of men, you know, in this industry. How do you find yourself, you know, working in this industry? Do you find challenge, you know, at times?
From a gender perspective?
Yeah, from the gender perspective.
Yeah, well, I sort of consider myself to straddle a couple of industries, because we're partly in the what we call the creative industries here, which is advertising, media, marketing, but partly in IT as well, because we make websites, we host websites, we do tech support, exactly. Etc. Yeah. So I do remember in 2012, I won IT Woman of the Year for Australia. Like, the fact they have an award for women is interesting. I was happy to, you know, be honoured. It was a great honour. However, there was 10% of females in that room, and I'd say almost all of the ones who were there were the partners of the men who were there. So I definitely know the feeling of being one of the very few women. I've then tried to, I guess, practice what I preach. I'm always encouraging my staff, people around me, you know, be a leader, you know, improve yourself, go as aim as high as you can, all that kind of stuff. And if I'm not doing that myself, then I'm a hypocrite. So I have been on boards. I've been the chair of boards as well. And around a boardroom, certainly, you're often the only female, if and certainly the youngest by maybe 20 years sometimes as well. And I've seen some terrible conduct. And, you know, I don't even want to talk about this in a way, because it's just shocking that here we are in 2021 and that we even have to talk about this. But, you know, I've had people say, what do you do? Aren't you a clever little girl? I mean, how patronizing and inappropriate. It's just like you just shake your head and they're so gobsmacked that... I had another guy in a board meeting when we were discussing what other new board members we might need and looking at what matrix and skill sets. His comment was, and this is, I think, last year, the year before, I don't think we should get females because they're typically emotional and irrational. And again, I just sat there with a wide mouth, and thank God a male at the table spoke up for me, because I was speechless at this. I did not even know where to start with him. So I love it when men stick up for women on the gender discussion. And there's a lot of discussion on it. We're seeing here in Australia, I don't know about Europe, the current stats, but certainly more women going on boards into leadership positions. There are more incentives and, you know, what's the word, accountability for it too. They talk about manuals instead of panels when they're an all male panel, and how, you know, if you're talking diversity or something that involves women or just at all, you should probably at least have a female on there to kind of give their perspective as well. So, yeah, it's an ongoing discussion, I think.
Yeah, because, you know, I speak to a lot of entrepreneurs, a lot of female entrepreneurs, and especially in the tech industry. I had a privilege to talk to a few entrepreneurs who were into AI space, you know, and they said, like, you know, even though they are very competitive enough, you know, in terms of coding and, you know, all the know-how of the domain itself, but still, like, when they're having a conversation with the developers, like core developers, then one of the developers said to an entrepreneur, like, why are you here in this discussion? So those kind of comments were passed to those entrepreneurs, right? So then I started asking this particular question to most of the entrepreneurs, like especially the female entrepreneurs.
Yeah. I also like to bring the discussion of diversity, not just from gender, but to actual diversity, because I still think we have a bigger issue there. We don't have enough young people represented. You know, I sat on a council committee, and there was no one younger than me, and I'm 40 at the time, and I know there's, you know, half of our population are under 30. So why is there no one there representing them if we're making decisions about our region? That didn't sit right with me. Why are they not elderly, retired? Why are they not different cultures, different languages, immigrants? Every diversity every voice needs to be heard. So I think people need to try a bit harder to achieve diversity. And that's something I'm trying really hard at work right now. We've got a few jobs out. And apart from who is the most skilled, whoever they are, it's about curating a diverse group of people too, because I could keep hiring people like me, 40-something-year-old mums, and I get them and they get me, and I'm sure we could work really well together. Mm-hmm. But I think we'd have a better company if we had all genders, all ages, different countries, and we're finally getting bigger and getting there. We do have people who speak different languages, who are over 50, who are under 20, and so on in our team now, and I'm proud of that.
So what's the future for you?
What's the future? First, it was just getting through COVID, which, touch wood, who knows
we'll get over it,
we're getting through that, and we're seeing really great growth, and long may it continue. So immediate future is hiring enough people to deal with the workload is my immediate future. Mm-hmm. And then when that's in place, actually start letting go of the reins. You drive. That's the plan, and the plan's going quite fast. So we thought maybe 2 to 3 years, myself and my business partner would be much more hands off and maybe only part of strategic meetings and, you know, other people running the business. And I think, to be honest, that's going to happen a lot quicker, maybe in the next 6 to 12 months, given the way things are going. We're hiring great people and I have great trust in them. Mm-hmm. And I think ultimately maybe one day sell the business, but maybe actually come to that point and not be able to part with it, because I do enjoy a nice lifestyle from it. So I'm not quite sure, but I do think whatever I do, I'll be still involved in some way at helping young people, being involved in technology. There's some of my pillars, female leadership. I still enjoy the speaking side of things, so I could see myself keeping doing that. keeping doing the consulting and possibly being on a few more boards and driving that diversity and female leadership and trying to bring some, you know, different perspectives to these important meetings that influence the world we live in. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
All right. Yvette, right? If I pronounce your name well. Okay. Yes. Thank you. Thank you for, you know, being a part of this particular session. You know, it was wonderful talking to you. You know, you were open about your challenges and you're open about everything that you went through in order to establish the business. And I really appreciate that openness and frankness, you know, and I like the fact that, you know, you went through all the challenges and yet you are doing it. So that's very interesting. So I really, really appreciate the fact, you know, that we had this discussion. Thank you. Thank you for this.